Hello, welcome to episode 51 of the Extra Sequential podcast, hosted by me, Mladen, out of Perth, Western Australia, and no one else.
Wrong!
Who is this?
Dan. Who are you interrupting? My name is Chris. I'm coming at you on my holiday from Sydney, but I'm so dedicated to our loyal listeners that I've decided to chime in. And also, Mladen has been constantly texting me saying that he misses me.
One of those statements was true. No, you are dedicated to the cause. I know you're on holiday, but you know it's not like you're doing anything. Are you enjoying your room service while doing this podcast?
I did have room service last night, and I felt no tonight actually, and it was quite enjoyable. I had pizza, and I felt they called me sir, and I signed for it and everything.
Oh, did you wear the bathrobe while receiving your pizza at the door to complete the hotel experience? Did you do everything that Macaulay Culkin did in Home Alone 2?
Was that set in a hotel?
Yeah, he's in a hotel for most of it. Remember, he goes to New York and Tim Curry's the boss of the hotel. There's a word for it. He's not the boss. Remember he's staying in a hotel and Rob Schneider asks for the tip and Macaulay Culkin gives him some gum?
You've got a very good memory for
that. I really do. And then he gets out of paying the bill by playing that same gangster movie from the 1930s.
Oh, okay.
And then they all think, oh, there's a crazy man in the room with a backing track and music. Because they can't tell the difference between a film and real life, Chris, is what I'm getting at.
Well, people in the 90s were stupider.
Yeah, that's what we'd like to believe. Adults act like idiots in children's films. I think that's a rule.
True.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're doing a comic podcast. I forgot. On today's show, we'll be reviewing a new graphic novel, original graphic novel, OGN, called Old City Blues, by...
try and say his name. I'll give you one chance.
Giannis Milonogiannis.
Close enough. Yeah, that's about right. That's the best I could come up with as well. He's Greek.
Yeah. You know, I don't know really a lot about Greek. Today I was watching a... you know those that show where they compete who can put on the best dinner for their friends? It's probably got a name like Dinner Party Party or something. And it's a Greek version of that on SBS.
Oh.
It's, yeah.
There's also a TV show called Greek, but I think it's set in a high school or something.
And Nick Dionopoulos. Those are the only Greek things I can think of. No, that's not true. For our Greek listeners, you have much to offer. The world. The Olympic Games, for example. There you go.
Which were originally nude.
Yeah. And full of drugs, from what I understand.
Like only one of those things is true today.
No, they're both true. You're allowed to take performance-enhancing drugs in the classic Olympic Games.
But you're not nude.
Oh, really? No. I thought you
were. No, I mean in today's Olympic Games.
Oh. So neither of those is true. Okay, that's enough. Let's get into comic book news.
Okay.
Can I begin things off?
Sure.
Because obviously the DC Comics relaunch, blah, blah, blah. Every week there's something to do with that, but I found this was fascinating. You probably saw this as well. The Comic-Con fan protest. That yes. was 12 people showed up.
12? Well, how many? Wow.
Yeah, they were all
down on three hands.
That is true. That is true. So 12 people out of a possible, I don't know how many DC comic readers there are. 500,000? That sound right? Probably more. I don't know.
I think like 350 or something RSVP'd on Facebook.
Which shouldn't count for anything. They're probably a lot of maybe will attends. But yeah, they were all cosplayers. And strangely enough, most of them were dressed up as Harlequin and the Joker.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about.
No.
This whole relaunch thing reminds me of that Simpsons Malibu Stacy episode. It's the same Malibu Stacy, but she's got a new hat.
Kathleen Turner was in that, I believe, as the creator of Malibu Stacy.
Really?
And Mr. Smithers had the world's largest collection.
good memories. But now that we've mentioned Simpsons, this podcast episode will be removed by request of Fox Studios.
Well, let's keep it with Fox then. The census is happening in Australia on the 9th of August.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be home. I'll be in Sydney, but, you know.
And you don't exist.
Dead eyes will not be counted this year.
That's a shame.
As your religion.
Yeah. So joke answers are no longer acceptable?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's another section on the form where you can say which fictional universe do you really, really, really like, and then they can just ignore the answers to that. Because this Jedi thing, it's just like saying, I'm obsessed with Star Wars. It's not a religion, per se.
No. Have you seen the new Judge Dredd pictures from the new Empire magazine? This is the new Judge Dredd film, which I think comes out next year, starring Carl Urban.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those pictures. He's scowling.
He's scowling, and it looks pretty good. The helmet still looks a tad big, but they've released other characters of the film, and one of your favourite actresses is in the film as well, which I didn't realise.
Who is that?
That is not Monica Bellucci. Who's the other woman? Lena Headey.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's got scarred, and she looks a bit unattractive, but nonetheless, it looks like an interesting film. Marvel have retained the film rights to Blade from New Line and Punisher from Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
But they said that they're not going to make films with those characters any time soon. So that basically means that now Blade and Punisher in the future can be incorporated into their cinematic universe plans, as it's called. So Blade and Punisher could team up with, Captain America or Iron Man or whoever.
Does that mean Wesley Snipes won't be appearing if they do integrate him? Because
he's in jail.
Well, he's in jail, but if he got out and he was like, I want to be in a new movie... Art of War 2 or something. Well, they already made that. Art of War 3. He couldn't then because it's a different studio. I wonder how that works.
Well, no, because Marvel now retained the rights again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's their studio, so no, they can do what they want, I'd imagine, but I think it'd be too old by now. Plus, Punisher has had two films with two different actors, so...
Yeah, that's true. I just really, really like Wesley Snipes and I wish him the best.
He doesn't get enough props, does he?
I don't think so. I was watching Blade and I'm like, he's... He's perfect for that role. Like,
yeah.
He knows what kind of film he's in, you know.
I did want to mention Kirby Crackle, who I don't think you're familiar with, but I interviewed them a couple of years ago when they released their first album. They're basically a nerdcore band, or duo, rather, and they've just released their third album called Superpowered Love.
Mm-hmm.
It's now on iTunes and also the physical copy you can order with a cover by Jim Mahfood. It's got 13 tracks on it, all about... pop culture-y stuff, comic stuff. There's like songs about Transformers and Mario Brothers, and it's quite him. It's kind of like Weird Al Yankovic for fanboys.
Kind of like Tripod, I'd imagine. Is it multiple dudes? Like,
yeah. Well, I was actually listening to Tripod on the plane on the way here. They were playing on the Comedy Channel. They were playing that. Girl, I'm gonna make love to you just after I finish this level. That song. That's quite humorous.
It's interesting. They should have launched a popular TV show like Flight of the Conchords because their songs are about on the same level as Flight of the Conchords, I think.
And I was in the comic shop today. Shout out to King's Comics in Sydney, which is a very good shop. And they were playing the band that you just said on the radio, Flight of the Conchords.
Is it like a PG-13 thing? I can't say the name of this group more than once. Is that the rule?
No, I can remember. I just didn't mention.
Oh, okay. Right. I have a piece of comic book news. Brian K. Vaughan is, he's been away from comics for a little while. I don't know what he's been doing, but, from ongoing comics, I should say. But, he's doing a new ongoing series through Image called Saga, and that'll be debuting in 2012. And that'll be co-created and illustrated by Fiona Staples. And the plan is it's like a balls to the wall science fiction book, which is what Vaughan's calling it, and he's saying it's going to focus on an unusual family and their struggle to survive in an intergalactic war. So he's planning, an epic, vast science fiction universe and centralizing it around this family and his own experience of having kids. But he mentioned the family has horns and wings and things, which is very vague.
Yes, I did want to mention this as well because he seems quite passionate about it. So,
yeah.
Okay, Vaughan has done Ex Machina. He's done... Why the Last Man, hasn't he?
Yes.
Marvel, a few other things. Fiona
Pride
Staples.
Of Baghdad, yeah.
Yes, he's done. Fiona Staples is a great artist, hasn't done a lot of comics work, but is a very recognisable style. And, the interviews I've read with Mr. Vaughan, he's pretty passionate about this project and is investing a lot in it. So, this actually looks really good. There's a lot of buzz, as they say, around this project.
Yeah, and it's... It's sounding more like a space fantasy than like a strict science fiction. So, the family dynamic thing, like a lot of people think of Star Wars, but the big one would be Dune. And that's like a huge family saga spanning, millennia. But, the first 44-page issue will have no ads, which I find really cool.
Yes. Yeah, it was pretty good, actually, because he did say in the interviews that he wanted no ads because it really breaks up the pace.
Agree.
I've never really thought about it before, because we tend not to read ads in comics, but they're not as intrusive as, you know, commercials, adverts on the TV.
Man, I beg to differ. If every second page is an ad.
Yeah, but you could just flick through them. It's, what, 1 second?
Yeah, but it's like while you're looking at that page, you have to – there's nothing on the – there's a picture of Michael Jordan slamming a basketball with milk on his face or whatever, you know. I've only read 90s superhero comics, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Who is a contemporary sports player, sportsman?
If you read the DC comics, it's Subway employees this week.
Subway employees are the sports people.
Yes, they are. I think it's the third or fourth Subway ad in a week. Anyway, our friend Keith from Quality Comics, and I don't know if you know this, Maladdin, so prepare to be excited. Are you sitting down?
I am. Do you want me to stand up so I can jump for joy? Is that the plan?
Do some squat thrusts. You mentioned last week that he met Jarvis Cocker.
Yeah.
At the comic shop.
Did Michael Jackson walk in? And he's like, where'd that son of a bitch go?
No, he's dead.
No, I know.
He's dead, Jerry. Dylan Moran.
Dylan Moran. Oh, wow.
He's Scottish or Irish or whatever. He's from comedian from Black Books and stuff and stand-up comedian. He's in Perth at the moment. So, Keith didn't meet him individually. Years of quality did. Apparently, he bought Sergio Aragone's Funnies number one from Bongo Studios.
Cool.
So that's pretty good. So yeah. Most people who, if you like Mad Magazine, you'll be familiar with Sergio's work. So obviously Dylan is a fan. So it's pretty funny, really.
Yeah, that's quite cool. So two visits in Quality Comics in as many weeks. Who will be next week, Chris?
Oprah.
Wow. She was just here.
She's going to be buying the Blue Water biography of herself.
Look, she'll forget details. She'll use it as source material for her own autobiography. Is that what you're getting at? It's all just on the wiki page. Anyway, what else you got?
A couple other things I did want to mention. The last of the Comic-Con news, which ended last week, is trickling out. So there's three more DC Comics animated films which are coming out next year.
Oh, yeah.
The next film is Batman Year One, which we talked about before. That's coming out on October 18. Next year, Justice League Doom, which is the last script written by the late Dwayne McDuffie, who wrote All-Star Superman. Mm-hmm. And it's loosely based on the JLA Tower of Babel story arc by Mark Waid and Howard Porter, which you will be familiar with,
mm-hmm.
where Batman defeats the Justice League, essentially.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Accidentally.
His secret blueprints for if he needs to take them down were used by someone else. Was that it?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Also, there's another film loosely described as Superman versus the Elite, which is based on the classic story from a couple of years ago, almost 10 years ago now, Action Comics 775 by Joe Gelli and Doug Mankey, which is one of my favourite Superman stories of all time. It's basically, that was during the period in the late 90s, early 2000s, where people kind of thought, you know, Lobo and Cable and Punisher were the real heroes and Superman was a bit of an outdated Boy Scout. So this story sought to show this is what being Superman is about, and so he basically just faces down a bunch of bad guys who consider themselves heroes but are really anti-hero. Like, it's very hard to describe. Action Comics 775, one of the best comics ever created. Lastly, there's going to be a two-part feature film based on Batman The Dark Knight Returns, based on Frank Miller's obviously classic work, which has a dystopian aged Batman. And the showdown between Superman as a government puppet and kryptonite wings and a one-armed Green Arrow and whatnot.
You know, it's surprising it's never been done so far. It's except for that one episode of Batman, The New Adventures of Batman and Robin, I should say, where they it was like Legends of the Dark Knight episode, and one of the kids' stories was about a futuristic Batman in a tank who fights mutants, which is what happens in Dark Knight Returns.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's the whole story of the novel.
So, pretty exciting time for DC Comics fans. And lastly, I guess some good news for Marvel fans, but not so much for fans of Jack Kirby. Kirby's estate. Jack Kirby is the legendary penciler who, with Stan Lee, created pretty much the cornerstone of the Marvel Universe. Thor, Fantastic Four, X-Men, a lot of those characters. He died probably 10, 15 years ago, I guess. And his family, his estate, have tried to sue Marvel recently to gain the rights of his characters.
Right.
And as subsidiary rights, they have lost to Marvel. Basically, the judge ruled in, I think, a 50-page document saying that Kirby knew what he was doing. He was kind of a veteran penciler and artist by that stage.
Right.
And he was basically a work for hire
artist.
So, and obviously in those days, we're talking, you know, the 60s, the kind of rights, creator ownership that exists today didn't exist back in those days. So, yeah, I mean, it's still ongoing. Still, the Siegel and Shuster heirs, the two guys who created Superman, that's still ongoing. But this is a pretty big one, so I guess it's a favour, in Marvel's favour.
Yeah, so the whole smile and Stan Lee is to distract you from the knife in the back.
Yeah, I know, it's a controversial ruling, I guess, but I don't blame Stan Lee. I think I don't know, he's never actually sued Marvel, but I guess they looked after him for so many years. And there's some kind of agreement there, I guess. I don't know. But,
Do you reckon he gets paid? He probably gets paid for his cameo appearances in these huge films.
Yeah, he'd get some kind of residual income for sure, I'd imagine. But obviously Jack Kirby is no longer alive to take care of such things. But
yeah, that's true. Can't appear alongside, I don't know, Chris Hemsworth in a film. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to remember a single actor in those films. Chris something?
Chris Hemsworth from Australia.
What's the guy who's in Captain America? And you watched this the other day.
I watched this today, Chris Evans.
Today, so,
It's a really good film, actually.
Yeah.
While we finish off the news, I might as well give it my thumbs up.
Get into it.
So it's really funny. I enjoyed it a lot more than Thor. It's fun and funny. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because Chris Evans' kind of big head and scrawny body actually doesn't look that weird. I thought, you know, I knew that a lot of the film was him before he became Captain America. But it actually looks good, and you feel for him before he becomes all beefy and bulky-like. And it's a really good film. It's got some nice little nods to Marvel readers, and it's definitely worth staying for after the end credits, as Marvel is Marvel's want.
All right.
So basically after the end credits, you'll see teaser for the Avengers film, which is directed by Josh Whedon. Comes out next year, and that's the big superhero team starring Iron Man, Hulk, Hawkeye, Thor,
now, Chris, I doubt I'll see this film at the movies. Spoilers for anyone who's going to stick it around for the end credits. Tell me what happens.
Well, it's not really a scene as such. It's basically a trailer. It's a trailer for the Avengers film.
Where, is there footage?
Yeah, there's footage.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Only like a minute long, but it's the actual first official footage. I think on Yahoo, if you look at Yahoo, there's about 10 clips on there, and you'll see the last scene of it, and about half of this clip that I've mentioned, you'll see it on Yahoo. That's the only place to see it at the moment.
Cool.
But it's pretty exciting, and you get to see kind of Thor in his more ultimate costume with his manly arms, and I don't know why I'm posing, put my arms out like Thor. But yeah, they've got all slightly different costumes and whatnot. There's no appearance of the Hulk in this trailer, but you see all the rest, Black Widow, Hawkeye, the Archer, played by Jeremy Renner from The Hurt Locker.
Yes.
It's a good film. I can't wait till next year. Not being a Marvel fanboy, more of a DC guy, but DC are letting me down in the film stakes, so Marvel has my attention for the next few years. I see, yeah, Shirley obviously liked the comment. I didn't even know it was that funny.
She is watching the Glee project on TV right now.
Oh, that's like a reality show where people are trying to get on Glee?
Yes, that's the one. So obviously it's...
Wow. So that's a hearty recommendation for the Glee project or whatever.
She's like, your podcast, this is funny. Anyway.
I can't control myself.
Okay. It's a special time of year, Chris. Comic-Con also.
My birthday! No, that's in February. February 19th.
I forgot again. Did I get you anything?
No.
Oh, no, I was going to give it to you, but you told me you didn't want it. It was that Batman and Robin comic adaptation. So it's mine. So is it at Comic-Con they do the ceremony for the Eisner Awards? Is that correct?
Yes, the Eisner Awards are named after Will Eisner, creator of The Spirit and father of the graphic novel, essentially. And yes, they're announced at Comic-Con every year. There's no huge surprises this year. There usually isn't. Comicbookresources.com, again, was named as best comics-related journalism website kind of thing.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that the best a comic shop in Israel, Spirit of Comics Retailer Award was a comic shop in Israel, Tel Aviv, called Comics and Vegetables. So I looked this up and said, what, Comics and Vegetables? And there was an interview with the manager of this store, and they said, how was the name decided upon? You guys actually a vegetable store as well? And the manager said, no, the name is based on a phrase in Hebrew. The closest word in English is et cetera. So comic vegetables, the closest translation.
I gotcha.
So, so it's pretty good. Did you want to run down a few of your...
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there was maybe a few, not huge surprises, but a couple of like, oh, okay. But usually like the Eisners, and maybe you agree or disagree, but there's a bit of like in-crowd prize giving. Like there's a bit of like a close-knit community of these professional comic book artists and DC and Marvel and Image and so forth. And oftentimes the awards will go to the guys you kind of expect it to go. And there's a few of those, but also a few surprises this year. And yep. I mean, I'm sure you could pick out your own examples. And you were reading Chew, I believe, from Image, and that got best continuing series. And
correct.
And there's some really excellent nominees I noticed there. Echo from Terry Moore, Lock and Key, which you're also a fan of. Morning Glories, which I've not read, but... that stars, it's those girls in a boarding school, is that the one?
Yes, yeah, I've only read the first issue, but it's one of those Image hits that has proven successful. Day Trooper by Fabio Moon, Gabriel Bard.
Oh, I was just going to mention, yes, Scalped, and it was really odd to see, there's a bit of like cross nomination, because Naoki Urasawa's 20th Century Boys was nominated for Best Continuing Series as well. And considering that's a comic from several years ago and only now is in English, it's just, yeah, it's like I was really surprised to not see anything. Well, you've got Scalped, but other than that, nothing from Marvel or DC proper in that list of best ongoing titles.
That's true. I think, the best new series is American Vampire.
Yes.
By Scott Snyder, that's a Stephen King.
Mm. And Raphael Albuquerque.
That's the one.
Yeah. Best limited series you just mentioned, Day Tripper.
Yes, which is an awesome one. I think we've both enjoyed it.
Yeah, by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Barr, twins. Very
excited. Best writer is Joe Hill for Lock and Key. Best writer artist, Darwin Cook for Richard Starks Parker.
Can I comment on that one? Because, I mean,
sure.
It is an adaptation.
That's a good point.
Yes, that kind of like made me raise a bit of an eyebrow, like, oh, okay. I don't know, maybe just for that reason and maybe because I didn't like any of the Parker books. I'm a hateful, hateful young man.
Well, I mean, Return of the Dapper Men by McCann and Janet Leigh got Best Graphic Album.
That's exciting,
As did Wilson by Daniel Clowes.
Mm.
So that was both books which we both enjoyed as well, which is pretty good.
That's right.
Mike Mignola, Best Cover Artist, Best Lettering.
He tends to win something, doesn't he? Like, if he's not... If he put out a Hellboy book that year, he'll win something for it.
Yes, someone said the same about Todd Klein.
Basically,
he's run like 17 or 18 years, the last 20 years. There's got to be other artists out there. But nonetheless, hopefully it just puts a spotlight on some... there's always ones that are obvious and there's always ones that are kind of...
Yeah.
Deserve the spotlight as well, and that's good to see.
Yeah, it's... Oh God! I don't know if it's a new category, but the foreign title thing, like the Asia, they had like separate categories for best foreign language publication, Asia, and then Europe and other. And
yes.
I think it was The War of the Trenches by Jacques Tardy won best reality based work and best
US edition of international material.
That's the title, yeah. That's from Fantagraphics. And I just read You Are Here by Jacques Tardy as well. And I've not read it was War of the Trenches, but I just want to mention this one real quick because it's about this guy who his sort of familial estate, his family's estate has slowly been sort of subdivided to the point where all he owns is the walls. So he just walks along the walls and he pays people a toll to use the gates to get in and out of their property. It's a really, really, really funny story. So I'm really quite eager to pick up. It was The War of the Trenches now as well. I mean, he didn't write You Are Here, but his artwork's really popping and awesome. So that was nice to see. But I saw best publication for kids, Tiny Titans. Now,
yes.
Is this something you've read? It seems
yes,
like,
and yeah. It's awesome. It's funny. It's one of those. It's basically done in a quite a cartoony, simple cartoony style where it's got the Teen Titans, so Nightwing, Cyborg, Beast Boy, those characters, but Superboy's in there, Supergirl, but done in a funny, very cute way. Right. But it's one of those things that both parents and kids can enjoy.
I was sort of, maybe it's like the cynic in me, like I've not read the book, but I sort of, whenever I see the Tiny Titans or Marvel Tots or, you know, whatever they're called, I don't know, chibi Marvel
X-Babies.
Yes, X-Babies. I sort of feel like they're designed to prime little kids to buy their comics when they're older.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
It seems skeezy.
It's good marketing.
Get them young. Get them hooked. It's like a smoking campaign.
You know, yes,
aimed at
right.
children. That's how I see it, because I find superhero comics abominable. We should do a show on that. I keep trying to do this. All right. Oh, yeah. And Wednesday Comics got our best graphic album reprint, and that I think we reviewed that back in our first ever show of Extra Sequential.
You are correct, sir.
And because we had our 50th anniversary, I was like, whoa.
It's a year ago.
Yeah. The only other things I was sort of disappointed to not see win anything, the horror, which...
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a collection of old EC horror comics. But that was for Best Archival Collection Project Comic Books. But Dave Stevens' The Rocketeer won instead. And that's pretty awesome as well, because that's a really high-quality comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, I was really surprised to see Lynd Ward's six novels and woodcuts. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a surprise.
Yeah, and that's like definitely outside of the whole world of comics. It's like an artistic thing. Yeah. But anyway, unless there are any other particular ones you wanted to comment on. Yeah, CBR won the journalism thing. Was that a surprise to you, or were you kind of expecting that?
No, I think they always win. There's really not too many good... Well, there are so many comic book websites and blogs out there, but Comic Book Resources do a good job, I must say. And Comics Alliance and Newsarama and Broken Frontier, of course.
Mention the one you write for.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, I'd like to do our review now.
Okay, then.
Okay. The book we are both reviewing is from Arkea Press. It's called Old City Blues. It's by Giannis... you try and say it this time. I did it last time.
Giannis Milongiannis.
That was good. Oh.
He was born in America. He grew up in Greece. He currently lives there. I don't know how many cats or dogs or children or wives he has. This is his first book. It's 130-odd pager, and it basically collects four issues of the Old City Blues series, plus a 15-page kind of backup extra story.
A one-off or something, yeah.
Yeah, and a two-page making of, which I found quite interesting. He basically says that... He's a budding artist, and he wanted to get his art samples out there, so he thought he'd write a story to kind of show his art in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So this Old City Blues is the story that he came up with, basically as a excuse, as a reason to get his artwork out there. But as he kept at it, the story kind of to get bigger and bigger. So he put the issues, the first two issues online last year. And then he got a fair bit of attention, so he put all four issues up online, and then Arkea approached him to put it in print, and this is how we are. So it's a pretty interesting way, and a lot of not only comic artists and writers, but novelists are doing that. At the same time, putting it up for free, getting interest, and then putting it on paper and making money.
It's wonderful that you can do that now in this age. That didn't used to be possible at all.
That is true. Before the days of the internet, it was impossible.
You could stand on a street corner, I guess, and give out free copies of your comic, although why would one want to do that? But yeah, we'll just quickly run it down. It's kind of like a science fiction mystery action-y mystery. I combined mystery and action-y in my head, and the words came out at the same time. It's about a detective called Solano, who's like a detective in the Special Police Division 10, and they are investigating the murder of a cyborg who's also the head of a large Japanese robotics corporation, and that sort of leads them down. They're talking with informants. He ends up teaming up with a lady detective who's part of like the, basically a mech unit, like a more of a Pat Labor. Anime fans will know what that is, Pat Labor. Gang of like, yeah, enforcer robots, and then they track down this. There's a big crime that I don't want to get too much into the plot, in that it reveals like the mystery once we get into too much of it. But suffice it to say, there's I guess a lot of like there's car chases, there's hand combat, there's big mecha fights, which I found really surprising, and there's like a big mystery behind it all. Does that fairly sum it up?
Yeah, pretty much. It's we should point out that it's actually set in the future, set in Greece. So basically there's been a big flood in 2016.
Mm.
So there's New Athens, and then the old kind of Greece is called the Old City, and yeah, that's where kind of most of the tale takes place. And as you said, yeah, this cop Serrano kind of investigates this cyborg murders that involve this the head of this huge robotics division.
Mm-hmm.
There's a VIP involved, and then there's like kind of this conspiracy over lunar colonization and people that want it to happen, people that don't want it to happen. I did find that it was, as a mystery, it was quite interesting, but the ending was somewhat abrupt. Like, it almost could have done with another 20 pages or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the ending, because there was, like, as you mentioned, there's the one-off at the back of this book, and I thought, okay, the story's got to keep going. There's a twist here, but there wasn't. So I was like, oh, okay. Not that it's a huge
almost setting something up for a sequel or something.
Like, yeah,
it was a satisfying conclusion. It wasn't confusing or anything necessarily. It just could have done with a few more pages just to kind of clarify and explain it a bit more.
Yeah.
But for the majority, the story is actually quite streamlined. The dialogue works really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an accessible story that has quite a fast pace, and it can be read quite quickly. I think both of us read this relatively quickly in one sitting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that there's no kind of, you know, meandering on the meaning of humanity and technology. And
I think there was like one line about that when they were like suiting up, preparing for something.
That's true.
But it wasn't to the level of something like the Ghost in the Shell movie.
Yeah. And there are, I mean, he's not ashamed to kind of point out the obvious manga and anime influences, as you mentioned before, and I noticed there's a bit where he puts on like an invisible suit, which is very Ghost in the Shell-like.
Yeah, he borrows pretty kind of not too, well, kind of a bit heavily from Masamune Shirow's Ghost in the Shell, as well as Appleseed, and this sort of elements of kind of the aesthetic, as well as like the little parts, like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, particularly like saying the vehicle and the mecha designs, they could have come right out of Appleseed. And like it was interesting because the cityscapes is very Katsuhiro Otomo-esque, and when it opens saying that, you know, the new Athens was built on the site of Athens after it was destroyed, and, you know, in this case it was a flood, but that's basically what happens in Akira, because there's new Neo-Tokyo built on the grounds of formerly destroyed Tokyo, you know? So I think he's wearing that on his sleeve, like trying to be not obvious about it, but it's a homage to these things, as well as Blade Runner, which he meant, I don't think he mentions it by name, but there's a illustration in the back of the police station in Blade Runner, and anyone who's followed the design of that film would probably recognize it straight away. Seeing this, it reminded me of lots of other things, like the cars remind me of the cars in Minority Report.
Yes, I got that.
And just little bits and pieces of those kind of things. I mean, similar books like recently, I guess The Surrogates first comes to mind, because this has got a fairly loose pen style, but a bit more controlled than that. And I think I prefer the black and white as well. And but they both involved an investigation of a murder, so it's hard to not think of those two together. But I think this sort of stands differently enough from that. I guess, like, I want to sort of say that if you're a fan of these kind of Ghost in the Shell, Appleseed, not so much Akira, because it's not really a police investigatorial thing. You probably get a kick out of Old City Blues, and there's fight scenes which are like very manga-esque in terms of the use of background and speed lines and that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, that is true. I'd be curious to see what pure manga fans who don't read a lot of American or European comics think about this. Would they go, "Well, this is an insult. This is just stealing," or would they think this is pretty cool? Because it is. It's more manga-y than American or European-y.
There are some European elements. I guess at this point, like, so much of manga style has been absorbed in Western comics that it's almost kind of excusable, but I think big parts of the ideas that he's coming up with here have already been done before. Say, like his ideas for the future city, they're very, very reminiscent of Ghost in the Shell, to the point where this could take place in the same world.
True.
So I could understand if fans of that work might look at this and go, rip off. Yeah. That's a reasonable criticism of it, and I think that's probably going to be something that comes to people's minds when they read this anyway.
I did find it quite enjoyable, I must say. The lead character, Serrano, is a pleasant enough guy. It's interesting that we never see his home life or know much about his personal life, but the other characters are all quite mm-hmm. well-defined, from his boss to kind of the corporate guys to his fellow cops in the mech suits.
Yeah, they don't really have a life outside of the case, do they?
No, it's all pretty focused on this. It's kind of one of those almost unashamed action movie kind of approaches to storytelling. Mm. But it does work, and as I said, it is quite accessible. I think, if anything, the art style may not be looked upon favourably by some people. I actually found it quite eye-catching.
Yeah.
And it is quite sketchy. It's not manga-y necessarily. No. It is kind of manga mixed with the European, and it is quite sketchy, even like his lettering. And like you said, you've got the speed lines and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm actually looking at it again now. He's got quite a good use of duotone, even though it's black and white.
Yeah.
You don't miss the colour.
Mm. I mean, he uses like his Copic markers pretty vigorously just to kind of fill in the blacks, but he's does it very roughly. It's almost kind of grungy the way he's done this. And I guess he wants the world to not look sleek. He wants it to look lived in. And
true.
Yeah, I mean, the faces reminded me of something while I was reading it. Maybe that's hard to place. It's almost like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something, that kind of thin... What's it? Kevin something? I can't remember.
Kevin O'Neill.
Kevin O'Neill, thank you. His sort of thin pen style reminds me of this very kind of jagged edges kind of thing, although it's more finished than the more recent volumes of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. We should review the new one, by the way. It's just come out.
I was just going to say that. It's came out, I think, today, or this week. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the fourth, fifth chapter, set in 1969.
Yeah, we should read it. And... I don't want to give spoilers, but something they've been suggesting in the previous volume is finally sort of delivered in this one, and I was like, I knew it! So, like for the modern day, leading towards the modern day setting, like what he was going to use for the characters. I won't say it until we review the whole comic.
So you've read it, have you?
Oh no, I've been reading other people's comments on it, because I was still making up my mind whether I want to read it. I guess, yeah, we'll review that next week, actually. Why not? Oh, no, we've got something special next week.
We do.
Yes. But Old City Blues, I mean, yeah, I think this will appeal to the fans of kind of... I guess Surrogates had the personal life thing going for it. I really loved the scenes of in between solving his crime in his perfect body, he would take off the suit and then it would be him at home with his wife and their disagreements there, and it kind of gave this extra dimension, and this is lacking that.
Yeah, this is nowhere near as dense as that. As I said, it is quite a simple story. Yeah. It knows what it's doing. And even though it's like 130 pages, I thought, that's quite a big comic. But I read this quite quickly and I never felt bored with it, which is, I guess, a good praise point, a good honour to give it. Yeah. And I read it quite quickly. I never was really confused with kind of what was going on.
Mm.
Towards the end, at least, anyway. That did get a bit confusing. But, enjoyable enough. It's something you certainly could give to someone who hasn't read comics before, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about the characters being... did you say well-defined? I don't want to misquote you here.
I think I did say that. Simple, but well-defined.
Yeah, simple was what I was going to...
Good dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue was good. I guess maybe it is because you don't see much of them, but I didn't really get an impression of what the characters are really like. Like the main guy is basically, reading him, I just felt like this is the writer just speaking through this guy. So he's going, if I was a detective, I'd be like this. And you see that a lot in the kind of escapist fiction. The author will write themselves into the main character and make themselves an awesome action hero. Other than that, he doesn't really... sort of have much of a kind of huge personality. I don't get a straight, same with his boss. Yeah. His boss is just a boss.
Yes.
And it's interesting, his female colleague has the exact same hair as Major. Is it Kurosagi from Ghost in the Shell?
Okay.
So, yeah. And, yeah, just skimming through it now, certain scenes borrow kind of vigorously from it. And there's a scene here set in, like, what looks like an old marketplace, and it leads nicely into... Because I was really excited when they mentioned at the beginning that it was set in Athens. Because, yeah. One, that's... I don't think I've ever read a science fiction comic set in Athens, and I'm so sick of seeing science fiction comics and just general comics, I guess, set in New York.
Yeah.
New York seems like the general go-to place if you're doing a comic where you need action to take place. You know what I mean? Because it's got the city. But this, yeah. I guess reading this, it didn't make too much of a difference in the end. You didn't really get a lot of flavor of Athens.
Good point. I hadn't thought about that, but there's no obvious architecture.
No.
Historical.
It looks more like, Blade Runner or Ghost in the Shell, which are both based off of modern Hong Kong, and that's what it looks like.
Yeah,
to the point where
it's
a character...
It's all crowded and shantytown-like parts of it, and telephone wires and whatnot going everywhere and bustling.
Yeah, and one character even has one of those straw triangular hats. I don't know what they're called. You know the type. That's something that Lone Wolf and Cub... would wear, like the big broad-brimmed straw hats. And I'm like, that seems anachronistic. Well, I guess it's meant to, but still, I wish there was more flavor, cultural flavor, considering the writer, Janis, Greek-born and raised. So, yeah, missed opportunity there, maybe.
Yeah, true.
Mm. Otherwise, I mean, I think we can both give this a modest recommendation, especially if you're into... mecha stuff, because there's a fair bit of that in here. Police piloting small robot suits, fighting stuff, invisibility suits, conspiracy intrigue and science fiction settings, and some fairly well done action. I think we can recommend it on those grounds.
Agreed.
Chris, what are your plans for the rest of your stay in Sydney?
Well, by Shelley's recommendation, I think I might have to watch that Glee show.
Oh man. Waste your trip.
No, I'm hopefully get as much writing done as possible, really. I'm just typing up my Captain America review as we speak. Well, not right now. And I've got a novel from a friend that I'm going to edit, and I've got a whole bunch of stuff that I want to write and kind of get out of my system. So this is my selfish, hopefully disciplined writing holiday.
That's pretty exciting. I mean, to take that time and to be away from the distractions of home to kind of focus on that. I'm sure some of our listeners are curious, will you be writing a comic?
Possibly. I'm just going to put stuff up on my blog, comicbejesus.com, over the next few days and weeks. And, I need to come up with a firm, concrete plan, but I've basically got... I think most, and I don't know if you're in the same boat, but I find most comic book readers are quite creative souls and wannabes in their own rights.
Yeah.
Because there is some kind of...
We are
creative to read comics. I think it's much more of an active engagement reading comics than, say, watching a movie. So I've had...
Less so
over
than
years
reading
and
a
whatnot,
novel.
So I want to kind of get them saved as actual Word docs. That's one of the big things I do want to do.
Mm.
And go from there.
I was going to say we're less less imagination that's involved than in reading a novel.
True.
Because we get pictures.
Yeah, that's true. But we have to fill in the gaps between the panels.
We're busy people. We're active, as Scott McCloud might say, we're active participants in the action on the page. Yeah, as you said, filling in the gaps.
We are active people. That's true. When was the last time you played tennis?
Oh, don't ask me that. It's not fair. The weather. It's the weather. It's been bad.
It's indoor tennis. No, that's okay. I've got a gym here at the hotel, but I highly doubt that I'll end up using it.
Mm-hmm. Not when you've got room service at your every whim. Can you get room service ordered down to the gym? A pizza while you...
Perhaps I can get him to feed me as I bench press.
I'm not paying you for nothing. Blah, blah, blah. All right. Mm-hmm. I'd like to announce our next week's topic because I could say I'm excited about this because it's...
And I don't
it's,
think any other podcast has done this.
Yeah, like once we realized that next week, I think... August the 8th, August the 6th or 8th, is International Day of the Cat or International Cat Day. And that to me was like, oh my gosh, that is a perfect comics theme.
It is.
Because cats are prevalent in the world of comics?
So this will be feline focus. So we'll be talking.
Oh, very good.
I can't just come up with it. Catwoman, obviously. We're talking about Catman. Yes, mm-hmm. There is a Catman. We're talking Black Cat.
Don't give them all away, but we might also eat some lasagna for the show and chat about how we hate Mondays.
Garfield.
Yeah. That was the thing.
I just saw an episode of, well, not an episode, the last couple of minutes of a Garfield CGI show on TV today, and he like turned into a big monster or something. I don't know.
Is this
he
a had, movie? Like,
a voice like Bill Murray, but it wasn't Bill Murray.
Was it the guy who did the Bill Murray voice on The Real Ghostbusters?
Possibly.
Yeah, because I think he did the voice of Garfield as well.
Okay.
And he has this dopey voice. And yes. Some say that Bill Murray got revenge on this voice actor by getting himself cast as Garfield, knowing that this guy was next in line to get it as the animated voice of Garfield in the cartoon that was before the movies.
Oh, okay.
Getting revenge for the terrible Real Ghostbusters voice that the guy did for Bill Murray to make him sound like a retard. Surely Bill Murray is above that kind of petty... No, he's not. he's on the level of that kind of petty revenge, I'm sure. What's the other rumor that he signed on to the Garfield movies thinking they were by the Coen brothers?
He signed on to the what movies?
The Garfield movies.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
No, it's by a different... Maybe he just says this in interviews because it's embarrassing. But it's by different... They're different Coen brothers. It's spelt with like a H. Yeah.
Okay.
They're the guys who directed some... Yeah, maybe Steve and Roger Cohen directed Garfield. It's different Coens anyway. But that's maybe Bill Murray's just trying to apologize to all the hipsters who went to see Garfield after loving him in Lost in Translation and Broken Flowers.
But he did have a wonderful cameo in Zombieland.
Zombieland, yeah. I've not... I've seen his cameo. It ends funnily.
Before I forget, I did want to mention that the creator of Old City Blues, Giannis Milongiannis, has a kind of behind-the-scenes look at the making of this book, kind of page-by-page description of what he was thinking and whatnot. And you can check that out at brokenfrontier.com. So if you're curious as if to buy the book or not, then go to brokenfrontier.com and kind of see his influences there, and as well as some exclusive preview art.
Very exciting. All right. You'll hear us next week chatting about fantastic felines. Very, very good. Well done, Chris. And I hope you enjoy Mardi Gras or whatever it is you're there for. And I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, you can catch us on iTunes at extrasequential.com. Email the show at chris@extrasequential.com.
And music for the show is purgeaudit.com. Blah.
Oh, you got in perhaps with some of your favourite cat characters.
Ooh.
Or you can join us on Facebook and also tell us how much you adore or to test us there.
Mm, test our knowledge. Oh, yeah, and we've got a new thing on the Facebook where we're doing page of the day, and maybe it's page every couple of days, but it's us showing you some of our some cool comic pages that we're like, wow, that's cool. So, yeah, get on there, comment, tell us that we're idiots, tell us how awesome we are. One of those, and hear us next week.
We could be awesome idiots.
Yeah.
All right. See everybody.
See ya.